Lewis has been awesome. Let's it go.
Inbounds Turner, left side of the backcourt. Turner crossed the timeline, throws it from high on the right.
He hit it, Evan Turner! He hit it
just inside of half court!
Lane's on the other wing. Bang!
Oh! Sent it in, Jerome!
College basketball! This is March Madness!
All right, here we go. Another edition, another step closer to the NCAA tournament. Talking college basketball, and there ain't nothing wrong with that. I am Timmy Hall. Evil Bald Colin is back after a week of setting up the entire Stadium Series broadcast. How'd that go for you last week, man?
Oh, it went great. Freezing, probably still cold from that event. Can't feel my toes still. No, totally joking, but it was a great opportunity. A very different setup at the stadium than I'm used to, doing it down in the camera deck versus the very warm and cozy press box and the home radio booth that I'm used to. So it was good. Glad to get past it and focus on March basketball.
Yeah, me too, man. What are you sort of focused on right now? I see you got the Vanderbilt. We are mid-major central. Well, I shouldn't say that.
Hold on.
I know. Whoa. Did he just say an SEC team is a mid-major team? No, I misspoke
there. An SEC
there.
Team that's going to make the tournament.
They're going to make the tournament. They're a lock to make the tournament. Incredible job by Vanderbilt and their new coach.
Yeah, Mark Byington came over from JMU, had a really good season last year with James Madison.
I come from a JMU Dukes. Family. You know that.
Like that's
sister,
right.
Brother-in-law, both graduates there. Awesome to see what, I mean, look at their coaches, man. Kurt Cignetti. You know what he did with Indiana football,
but it really just shows
Dukes
you.
Hoops.
Yeah, it really
they beat
just
Michigan
shows
State
you.
Last year. That they put him on the map, kind of.
That's right. But it really just shows you when you really hit a home run with that hire, what it can do for your program.
It sure does.
Yeah,
it sure does show you that. I'm wearing my Davidson Wildcats quarter zip.
They've struggled since joining the A-10.
Not good. Yeah,
no,
not good.
It hasn't been great.
I think they're a 6-11 A-10 team this year. That's embarrassingly bad.
Yeah, they're kind of in
Steph Curry should change that himself. Whatever he's got to do, that guy's got enough money.
He's sponsoring all their stuff, and I think they have his logo on their uniforms.
He does. He has his handprints all over that. They should have he should do more. That's what I'm going to say for Steph. There should be any player they want, he should be able to fork up the NIL sacks of cash. I mean, that dude could easily just sprinkle $5 million a year to Davidson basketball.
Oh, no doubt.
It's like a $20 bill. Leaving his bank
account.
Yeah,
it's a program that's kind of, I call it the Butler complex, where good in the previous conference you were in, and I think you kind of test your luck a little bit too much to chase maybe the money in the higher-profile conference, and now you just can't get out of the cellar.
It's a good comp. It really is.
I mean,
you get the Bulldogs out in the Midwest
and
here.
And Butler had a pretty good run, I would say early on in the Big East, but really for the last 5, 6, 7 years, it just feels like it's kind of been stagnant.
Is this part a Thad thing, do you think?
Which is funny. Actually, I think Thad's got one of their highest recruiting classes ever coming in the offseason.
So you have to see that through.
Yeah, he's got Fran
right.
McCaffrey's
yeah.
kid, but he's got Fran McCaffrey's kid
well, he's
committed
to him. He's already on the roster, right?
Well, I'm sorry. I should specify, yes, he has Patrick McCaffrey, the
another
player who's been in college basketball for 9 years, it feels like.
Next one is coming.
But I think his name is Jack.
Okay.
The youngest of the McCaffreys is actually signed with Butler.
God. There are a lot of those
McCaffreys. Yeah, it has a real chance to be a really solid young team, but, I mean, Thad's kind of up there in years in terms of basketball years, and there's kind of been some, you know, not really rumors, but kind of wondering when is he going to hang up the whistle.
Yeah, we are wondering that. But if you've got a solid recruiting class and with everything that he means to Butler, where it started there for him,
sure,
you're definitely going to want to see at least another year through and if he can get that back. But it's just so different now, right? And for the coaches that are of a certain age, there are a lot of questions about them. They're starting to ask questions now about Bill Self. With the fact that Kansas basketball is going to be, they're already locked into their second straight double-digit loss season. They're going to be at least a 13-loss team this year. Kansas is.
So what you're saying is you wish he took that offer from Oklahoma State?
I wish if T. Boone Pickens wants to come back in the Brinks truck up again, go ahead this time, Bill. I'm joking. I'm kidding. You would never, ever say that about a legend like that. He's not even that old in the grand scheme, but it just... it makes you wonder.
He's got Darren Peterson coming in next year. He's got some guards that are on the way. Yes. I think they just kind of...
They just haven't had like a dude like that in a few cycles. You get a guy like Peterson, you hit a home run. You hit a home run in the transfer portal, which, again, Hunter Dickinson is hard to...
He's got a ceiling.
It's hard to break
and
down, right?
You didn't really hit your transfer guards very well offseason.
AJ Storr is one of the biggest transfer busts that we've seen. The fact that he was a 17 a game guy at Wisconsin. I mean, am I wrong? Am I missing something? Clearly, the fit like what they wanted to have him do.
St. John's, he leveled up at Wisconsin. Yeah, you would have thought, he'd be one of the top guards in the country, and it just hasn't turned out to be.
I mean, because offense was not a thing that he struggled with, but he just has not. I don't know if it's something with
maybe decision making, but that really isn't the issue. He just isn't.
He's not able to hit shots.
He's not efficient.
Yeah, not efficient, not hitting shots. It's just been a complete disaster for them. But no, that was a good point you went down there, how Davidson and Butler basketball might be suffering from a little bit of the same thing.
I'm sure we could probably go down more programs that are probably in the same position. I do like actually UMass moving from the A-10 back to over to the MAC. I think it might fit them for their regional recruiting and their ability to compete in that league.
And that is going to be interesting for UMass to see what they do. But you think about those first two, basketball-rich states, Indiana for Butler, North Carolina for Davidson, Tobacco Road area.
It's just the resources in the NIL are not there to compete with the teams in those leagues.
It's hard, right? It's just a difficult thing to manage. Some of the things that happened this week in college basketball, I mean, my goodness, how I take you through some of the sounds of the week in college basketball. This Ole Miss-Tennessee game, this one was quite a thriller.
They switched off the screen. Milicic has it. Milicic got it away from Brakefield, and it would not go. And Ole Miss hangs on to win by two.
So the SEC is sort of running college basketball this year, and more power to them. This shot by Milicic, I mean, we had one in the Ohio State-Michigan game where Bruce Thornton was right at the rim. This was more at the rim.
It was, but it was...
To tie the game.
But he had less control over it. I forget who the player that came across the face of Igor on that play, but he did kind of disrupt and dislodge the ball
defended.
a little bit.
Yep.
But still,
it was a layup.
You're going to want to make that.
His reaction says it all. Like when that final buzzer goes off and it's 78-76, Ole Miss gets the win, you see Milicic kind of going into a crouching surrender cobra type of position there, like that's brutal. That's totally brutal. But Chris Beard's squad, and there again is another
21-22 win team. I mean, he's 22-9 outperforming expectations.
Yeah, 22-9, and they're just one of the 13 or 14 SEC teams that could wind up dancing here this year.
I mean, I don't know if you saw, but Ken Pomeroy, who runs the website Ken Pom, he put together an article. I forget which publication. Maybe it was just his own website talking about how the SEC might actually be overrated. And I mean, I guess I could see and hear some arguments on that, but no, the teams that are actually going to be in this tournament, I think they have some standing. I am a little concerned
about... Ken Pom said that, huh?
I forget where he put that article out, but there was something to the effect that maybe they're overrated. And well, maybe that's because they are. And I was like, okay. I mean, I still think the top of that conference is about as good as you're going to find it, and they'll go toe-to-toe with the Big 12.
Well, he does have 13 of them in his own top 45.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? Like that. I was just, as you said that, I'm like, let me pop up Ken Pom's own website, because I visit that almost on a daily basis. And yes, it's just chock full of SEC teams in his own metrics.
Well, the interesting thing about his metrics is there's really no opinionated information on that. It's all statistics. Like it's efficiency, points per 100 possessions on offense and defense. The luck rating is some type of mathematical equation. So like there's not a whole lot of opinion that goes into those. Maybe it's just something on his own accord, but I'll have to look it up. I saw it earlier this week.
I tell you what, Colin, just for going over some of the current things in college basketball as we're heading a week closer to Selection Sunday. As we record this on a Thursday, we got some small conference tournament action going on. I know you're a big fan of Arch Madness. We've talked about that tournament many times. If we were jobless or we were just paid to go around and watch college basketball games as fans, you could sit me at Arch Madness, and I'd watch every single game, every single session, and just be happy as a clam.
Absolutely, especially with it being during the day. I mean, day basketball is great.
It's especially just great.
This is a time of year where if you don't have an ESPN Plus account, maybe get into that for about a month or so, and then you can dip out of it. But I actually, while you were talking about that, I looked up the Ken Pomeroy thing for the overrated. Yeah, he actually did post a newsletter about that. Danny Cannell, I know, ran with it because he feels that way in the football sphere.
Yeah.
And Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, picked up on it and kind of went after it. And he used the old...
Don't get on Sankey now.
Yeah, he used the old... He was kind of being tongue-in-cheek, being funny with it, and brought up the old Carl Revish, we've been 500 since this time of the season. So yeah, you might have a point. But no, it's great discussion points. And we can probably get into this later, but I was in this camp of Florida and Tennessee being these two teams of, yeah, I know the metrics say you're good. I know you have a good season, but I don't fully believe in you. I'm starting to move off of that with Florida. They're just winning games that it's hard to deny.
Wouldn't you have a little bit more belief in a team like Florida with their length, with their depth, than Alabama, and just the multitude of ways they can win and beat you?
Absolutely. I do with that, and then I trust our guards a lot more than maybe Lanier's consistencies can be up and down. Ziegler's kind of been that through his entire career.
And Tennessee,
yeah, I would definitely back Florida more than Tennessee.
I think I would be into Florida right after Auburn in the SEC. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm with that. And that's, and
I think
that's
you
not
have
that
to.
That's not that I have no belief in Tennessee or Alabama in the ways that they can beat you and the ways that they can get hot, because Alabama is just a sheer scoring team. They can just go nuts
way
they shoot it. But if they go a little bit cold, I mean, they lost a game in the mid-high 90s, though.
But that's
right?
Just how they're going to be. They're not going to play great defense, but they're going to get up as many three-point shots
and
shots
transition
at the rim as possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's why they're going to be susceptible to either going to the Final Four or losing in the first weekend.
I do want to say, though, closing the talk for this past week, Michigan State gets at least a share of the Big Ten championship. A lot of conversation this year. A lot of topics about where's Tom Izzo in his career and when is he going to be done, and just sort of reevaluating everything that guy means to college basketball. It's been sort of a cool season in that regard to see for Tom Izzo and just see him doing his post-game interviews and how much he really loves this team. And he almost seems like he's falling back in love with the game. I don't know if he ever fell out of love. I wouldn't say that he fell out of love, but maybe reinvigorated, or he's kind of stamping it down again, like how much he loves this game and Michigan State basketball, how long he's been there. They've got another game to maybe get the move off of having a share, win it outright. But they are,
I think they should just destroy Iowa is what you're saying.
I'm just saying I like that team. We've seen them here. They're deep. They also have great length. They can get 10 guys in the basketball game. Jace Richardson seems to get better every time he steps on the court. They're just good.
Yeah,
really, really good.
You're going to lead me into the discussion point on it, because when I looked at this team preseason, I thought, yeah, they'd be top half of the Big Ten, but there really wasn't anything on this roster that said, yeah, this makes it really sexy, appeal.
But then
like
once
it's going
they started
to be
playing.
A Big Ten championship contender. And, I mean, even scoring across the board, there's only two guys that average double digits. You mentioned Richardson and then Jaden Akins, the long stay at the guard position for the Spartans.
But yet they average 78
just,
a game.
They're just tough.
They do it as a team.
They very much are a team. That Frankie Fiedler that came in from, I believe, Omaha, which has actually been a pretty good story out in the Summit League. He's been a piece.
The 20 a game guy there. He's been a nice piece.
He's been a nice piece. But
I think he led them a couple games ago in scoring.
Yeah, so it's just a very solid team. It doesn't pop off the page if you look at the numbers to say, oh, wow, this is like Final Four championship caliber team. But I think on the paper, I don't think it does. But if you actually watch them play and how they can just force teams to play how they want to play, that's going to go a long way.
I mean, on paper now, it says that. The only thing you would say is their offensive efficiency rating might be a tad low for Final Four team.
Sure.
But defense is top five in the country. And offense, I believe, like we broke down, is good enough. It's good enough because they
good
can
enough.
Play
they
team basketball.
They don't fall into deep droughts that really get them in trouble.
And they're,
I think
not
a lot
giving
of teams...
up, they're not giving up like 10 to 15 runs.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not the Tennessee effect where they can go really, really cold and then they have to rely on their defense the entire time.
All right, good start. Our man, Rhyme Time, Jacob Reimer, he was just on his way in as we started recording today. I saw something that I know you might not love because I thought you were this team's number one celebrity fan. but I guess I was wrong. We'll hit on that. Coming up here, you guys are locked into Mad About Hoops.
All college basketball, all the time. You're listening to Mad About Hoops, The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
It is Mad About Hoops. We are your college basketball loving friends. I'm Timmy Hall, Evil Bald Colin, Jacob Reimer, Rhyme Time. We just add another college basketball themed shirt. I know we're not on video or anything, so we have to be very descriptive. Evil's got the black hoodie, Vanderbilt Commodores. I've got the black and red quarter zip, Davidson Wildcats. We broke those two teams down a little bit more in the first segment there. And we get a cream-colored UConn Huskies hoodie.
With the vintage logo.
Vintage logo. Now, what brought this one on? It's just a love fest for Dan Hurley?
Yeah,
why?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a friend go out to Connecticut, and I asked him to pick me up a hoodie. And
it's a good friend.
He got me one.
Now, did you actually have the guts to wear it down to the Xavier game?
No, he didn't.
Oh, no. I just got it this week.
Okay, that's fair. I'll give you that.
Were you wearing Xavier gear when you went to the Xavier UConn
Yes, I was.
Game?
I have a little Xavier hoodie. I've got a couple Xavier t-shirts as well because my sister goes down to Xavier, so I'm just collecting all the...
Yeah, because you have a family tie
to
Xavier.
Yes.
So somebody goes there, that's...
We try to get down,
green light.
Down to a game once a year, the Cintosses. We discussed it earlier.
Yep,
we did a review on a few pods ago, and it's a must-get-to arena in college basketball.
We love arenas. We love venues. You got to step it up.
Yes.
You got to step it up and getting around to different college basketball venues.
Yeah.
I do too. I've been to several, but I've not been to enough in the Big Ten. I haven't hit, we were talking about Michigan State as well. I still haven't been to the Breslin Center. I don't know if you're going to find much better of a college basketball environment than that place,
mm-mm.
Especially with what they've been this season.
When they're at this level, that place can get very loud.
Illinois as well, mm-hmm. I think is a good one for some of the, you know, upper echelon.
You got the Mackey, you got Assembly Hall.
Yeah, Mackey's a no-brainer. You got to get there. Assembly Hall, same way. Any under-the-radar ones in the Big Ten? I know, Colin, you travel more around for football. You see the football stadiums.
Nebraska's always a tough place to play.
Yeah, Nebraska here is pretty underrated.
Yeah, yeah. No, as Gary Parrish from CBS Sports says, no one walks in the Pinnacle Bank.
Nobody
walks away with a win.
Nobody goes.
Unless
certainly the Buckeyes did not.
I think someone just did recently. I forget who it was.
Minnesota did.
That's right. Minnesota did.
Really hinders Nebraska's chances.
They're on a four-game
tournament.
They're on a four-game losing streak, Nebraska's,
right,
with the loss to the Buckeyes.
It is interesting in the Big Ten. I've realized going to the football stadiums, most of these gyms are like adjacent to the football stadiums. Like, it's actually pretty close.
Like the complex.
Like Mackey, you could probably throw a stone from the top of Ross 8 and hit the wall of Ross 8 or Mackey. That's pretty. I think it's interesting just how kind of tight knit the communities are on these campuses, that everything's just kind of in all one area. I got to say, with Ohio State, I kind of miss that.
We're missing two bigger ones, and that's Wisconsin and Michigan.
Chrysler, yeah. Again.
You would want to go to both of those.
I was going to throw out Wisconsin before I thought of Nebraska, yeah.
Yes, no question.
Mm-hmm.
When it was Bo Ryan's time, they had, I want to say, a 12 to 13-year stretch that was as good as any place in college basketball. It was Duke and Kansas-like. The rate that Wisconsin won in their home gym, they would go entire seasons and not lose a game on their home court.
Yeah.
That was not a rare thing for them.
When Ohio State would be playing early in the early 2010s up in Madison, I was like, this is a must watch, even though it's going to be nearly impossible to leave there with a W. No matter how good Ohio State is, Wisconsin is on another level at home.
There's a couple mid-tier Big Ten teams, too, that I think arena-wise are bucket list ones. Minnesota for the first one, the barn, just the kind of place that is. I think they have the raised floor, the absolute opposite of that, which is just a unique thing. Yeah, you speak of the devil, Vanderbilt.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
They have one of the strangest courts with all that space on the side court, like it's a stage for concerts or something instead of basketball. And then
could be.
And then the seating starts. But the rack, I would say, Rutgers. I've heard such great things about their venue and their environment there.
I mean, maybe the environment good, but I have not heard good things about the actual like amenities of the facility, lighting and all that.
Well, you and me probably differ as far as what I need for amenities, because I'm actually cool if you keep some of the old and you aren't necessarily fully modernized when it comes to college basketball. That's a personal thing, though. That's me. Like, I could go to the Palestra and be happy as a clam, and they just have, like, the oldest concession stands you could possibly think of. Same thing when you go to a Kansas game. Like, what you get is what you get. Like, that's the arena they choose.
How have we not mentioned Maryland?
Yeah, College Park.
Yeah.
Maryland.
I don't know. It's Xfinity.
Spring break.
Yeah.
Spring break in the East.
Right.
Which is interesting because they've actually had a really good season, and I've seen from time to time them complain about maybe attendance with the students at least.
The game, the Michigan State game, that was one of the loudest environments I think I've seen this season. Everything was locked in. Like,
and
the
quiet
music,
fast.
It did get quiet fast, yes. But throughout the whole game, it was just constant loud noise trying to mess with Michigan State.
I can't remember if I started off the discussion and mentioned Illinois in there.
You did.
I did, yeah, because the Orange Crush, that's a place that looks like they get hopping. And really good environment there. I teased this, Jacob, because our guy Evil Bald Colin, I think, was on his way to maybe being Dayton basketball's number one celebrity fringe fan. And I realized this week.
Oop.
I realized this week where you had the SLU UD game.
The Arch Baron Cup.
The Arch Baron Cup. Thank you, CB. And Anthony Grant, see if you can tell who this is. He is getting dapped up by somebody post-game in the hallway here in the tunnel after Dayton comes up with a big 75-67 win over the Billikens from SLU.
Good game tonight, sir. Beautiful comeback, brother. Beautiful, man. Honor, bro. Great to see you, brother. Yes, sir. I'll be back, too.
There you go. So, for those that are in the know, Chappelle Show. Dave Chappelle in the house, and I had heard that was the first UD basketball game that he had been to. And I saw he took a nice photo with the Dayton players, Zed Keys all in there, smiling ear to ear. It looked like he had a blast. He had a great time. He's wearing his classic jacket that's got his C logo on the arm. So Dave Chappelle, Anthony Grant, Dayton's coach, they're having a good time. And a big win for Dayton, who I think still has to do a lot of work in the A-10 tournament if they're going to go dancing here. Obviously, they got to probably win the thing if they're going to go dancing.
Yeah, this is funny. This actually kind of hits close to home for me. So I live about 30 minutes from where he lives, which is
Yellow Springs guy?
He's Yellow Springs.
He's always around
there.
If
you've never been down there, it's a pretty cool little village.
They got the dairy place, right? The
Young's Jersey Dairy.
Young's,
that's just outside of Yellow Springs. But yeah, no, it's a great place to visit. He probably hasn't gone to many games or a game since this or before this one, because he really doesn't leave Yellow Springs a whole lot unless it's for business. But it's actually cool. If you go down to the bar or whatever down in the village, sometimes he'll just kind of go up and sit next to you at the bar or something like that. He just acts like a normal citizen in the village. It's actually really cool.
That is very cool.
But yeah, no, it's always great to get the finest in the state of Ohio showing up to these events. And Dayton, I mean, obviously we know they need to make a run in the A-10, win the A-10 tournament, but I mean, if they play like this and play consistently, they have a shot.
Maybe this is the kind of spark they needed, or the sign. Dave Chappelle loves A-10 basketball, loves Dayton basketball.
But I will tell you, the one team that will not like, well, one of several teams that would not like that scenario is obviously Ohio State, because that would be a bid stealer.
That's what I was just going to say. Rhyme Time just had a video this week on our fan social accounts at 971 The Fan, and A-10 is so into bid stealing.
Oh, yes.
That's the one thing. They do it every year,
Duquesne,
man.
Duquesne last year.
You think VCU is going to win that conference tournament? No way.
I don't feel good about
it. No way. Not a chance. I see they're at the time we're recording this, they're locked into the top spot, so they win the championship, or at least a share. George Mason has got the 2 seed. Those are the only 2 seeds they have filled out so far in their bracket, and they all go. I had to look that up because formats change. Everything changes with how many people, how many teams are eligible even. All 15 A-10 teams go.
It's in Brooklyn, I believe.
Dayton's third right now in the standings, so they're at least doing that part where Dayton basketball is a certain kind of standard where – we're talking about what happened to Davidson. That cannot happen to you. Like, you at least have to be living in that top five of your conference standings and hopefully making runs to win your conference championship virtually every year and try to at least be in a position where you could get an at-large bid into the big dance. And this is a weird year for them because they got some good wins, Dayton does. And they went to the Maui to try to beef up their their net rankings and their quad one win chances.
I was gonna
say,
they
beat your shirt today. They beat UConn.
They did beat UConn.
That's big.
If they can get back to playing how they were in Maui and in that run where they beat Marquette, there's no world where they can't go on and win the A-10 tournament and sneak in and steal a bid from a bubble team.
Yeah,
I agree.
Absolutely.
They're good enough to do it.
But their style of play doesn't really lend them the opportunities when they're down because, again, the staple of the Anthony Grant team is they like to play a slow, methodical game that's more based around their defense and trying to be efficient in their limited offensive possessions. When that's not working, that's why they've struggled this year and why they're in the position that they're in. And if they want to make it to the tournament, they have to do something they really don't do well, which is perform well in the conference tournament, because actually, for as good as Dayton's been for the last decade plus, they don't usually perform well when it comes to the conference tournament.
He is Evilbald Colin. He's Jacob Reimer. Rhyme Time. I'm Timmy Hall. Your boy, Rhyme Time, seems to be at it again as we take a listen to some of the sounds of the week in college basketball. You guys are locked in to Mad About Hoops.
One of these men is evil and bald. The other one is Timmy Hall, swinging his meat bat. You're listening to Mad About Hoops on The Fan.
Meat bats are out. Timmy Hall, Evil Bald Colin, Rhyme Time, Jacob Reimer. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-da-ba. Next Sunday, we're going to do a little live thing. What do you say to that?
Okay.
A little live show while we're watching Selection Sunday. We'll get on some of our social channels. We'll do this on maybe the Fan's YouTube Live and break it down. We'll see if the Buckeyes, we'll talk about the Buckeyes coming up here in the next segment, but we'll see if they make it, because this could come down to Selection Sunday where we really don't know, yay or nay, if they're going to get in. That could be fun.
With whatever else happens in conference tournaments with potential bid stealers.
Yeah, bid stealers. I mean, if the Buckeyes, if they beat Indiana and then win another game or two at the Big Ten tournament, they're good. They're good.
So right now it's looking like they would play Northwestern in the first game of the Big Ten tournament and then Illinois in the second round, their second game.
But again, this is not
a 10-7.
This is a road game at Indiana that they got to finish with.
True.
And I am no way I'm guaranteeing that they get the job done.
It must have changed, because I thought at one point last night it was USC in that spot in the first game on Wednesday. But again, there's so many teams right there with 11-12 losses that it seems like
there's
going to
be a lot of movement by the time we actually get a final bracket.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. They win on Saturday. They're playing at Thursday at noon.
It's pretty simple.
Sounds good to me.
We win. Google
if you
me.
Lose, you play Wednesday, I think, around 6 o'clock.
All right, so the Big Four in Ohio, you got the Buckeyes, you got Cincinnati, Xavier, and Dayton. We just broke down Dayton. Hadn't talked much about Cincy or Xavier here, but we have gotten into the Bearcats a little bit on the pod recently, the last three or four episodes. I feel like we've done that. And we've heard from this guy before. And you're a boy, Rhyme Time, because he's a UNC Tar Heel. That's Wes Miller, head coach of Cincinnati. And he, in a way, seems to have picked up some of the brashness that their last coach possessed in Mick Cronin. But it's also like this guy is not afraid to go out there and get real with his fan base. So when they just fell to 7-12 in conference play this week, this was Wes Miller really owning it all after the game with one of his players. I also love how their setup is, because one of their key players of the game is sitting right next to him. That's not like coach goes or players go, players leave, coach goes by himself. So the player gets to sit here in real time, listen to everything that the coach has to say when he's still pretty much in his feels because the game just ended. But this was Wes.
So first of all, give Kansas State credit. Give Coach Tang and his group credit. It's an unacceptable performance. The effort's unacceptable. The fight's unacceptable. It's on the head coach. I'm the leader of the operation. I got to do a better damn job, and it's on my butt. So it's on my ass. That's the truth of it. But that's unacceptable. I boo our butts too. I boo myself too. Goddamn, that's unacceptable. Unacceptable. The fight and the efforts. I don't care about missed shots and layups and free. That doesn't matter. The effort is unacceptable. And I haven't seen that team. I don't know who that team is. I don't know who that basketball team is. I hadn't seen that in a long damn time. This has been a tough fighting group for 3 to 4 weeks. 4 weeks. And I thought we played as hard as you can play against Houston. It didn't go our way. Some tough call. Like, I don't know what the heck that was today.
Yeah. So, Wes. Wes was on a roll once again, and he did this. He did this a few weeks ago. He almost had the same exact press conference a few weeks ago. I think it was after the Kansas game.
Yeah, that
sounds right. It was one of the embarrassing, and it's not embarrassing to lose to Kansas. It's the way that you did it, right? It's the way. It actually might have been West Virginia. That might have been the home game that was even
West
worse.
Virginia,
or
they
felt
lost by
worse.
13 at home.
That was the one.
Utah and BYU and Texas Tech.
Yeah, that was the one. But, you know, you had Cincinnati was getting closer to the bubble line. Xavier has been getting closer to the bubble line. So it's not the year that Ohio basketball really wants to be having, where you're all just trying to sneak in. But there was a chance where three of the four, maybe even all four, like if Dayton gets the run in their conference tournament, could still go. But a couple of key losses for Cincy. And this is a really disappointing season, because we talk about things that we saw. Like, you didn't see it really with Florida or Michigan State to this extent. People were seeing things with Cincinnati basketball.
Absolutely.
I really wasn't seeing it, but I didn't think that they were going to have to be fighting for their lives to make the tournament. I just maybe didn't see a top 15 team like they were giving them credit for at the start of the year.
Well, yeah, it's another product of the tough conference that they're in. I think they just have been dealt with a hand that is unfortunate with how the Big 12 is. And it's not just that they're losing, is that some of these games are not even getting into the 50s with scoring. So it's just like, they're struggling to even be competitive in that aspect.
Yeah, they were coming into it. They were looked at going to be one of the best defenses in college basketball. I still think like they really get after it defensively. They play a very physical style. That's why they were able to hang with Houston there a little bit. But yeah, the offense just is not there, and it's a tough watch at times. Like that Kansas game where they didn't even get close to 50. When you're at home, like, you cannot have that on your home floor. You got to be. That's where you're supposed to be more comfortable and knocking down shots and being a little bit more free. And it just hasn't been the case there for Cincinnati.
And it was Dylan Mitchell, if you guys aren't familiar with him, who was sitting at the podium next to Coach Miller there. And that's a dude that played 26 minutes and had 2 points, you know, and three turnovers.
That's just not what you expected when you got him out of the portal.
Right.
The way that Wes is talking about the effort and the team and his player who did not meet a lot of those expectations for what he's breaking down is right next to him. That's real talk, right? It's tough. Like, you're doing that publicly. It's one thing you're having that conversation in the locker room. It's another thing as the player, you have to sit there and take it while the media is staring at you and your coaches
rallying.
Not saying it's wrong. Wes, I appreciate Wes saying it that way.
Well, and like you were comparing him to Mick Cronin earlier, this is the second time he's done this like Mick has done this year.
It hasn't gotten through to them.
And
to get him to lock in, at least with the effort part.
It's probably too late. I mean, yeah, you gotta go on some kind of magical run in the conference tournament now, I think, to actually get into the tournament.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be for them. I go to this. This was something that Jay Billis was breaking down it was right at the tail end of the Florida-Alabama game, and he was talking about, he went on a little rant on the rules in men's college basketball.
Nate Oates, 1.7 seconds left. Would you like to see them eventually change the rule where when you have timeouts, in college basketball, you make it like the NBA, and you could advance it to half court to save time?
I would absolutely like to see that. But that's one where there's a lot of resistance to that among the college basketball traditionalists. They think you have to earn that real estate. I'm not one of those. But I'm in the reasonable minds can differ on that. But I don't think it's going to be changed anytime soon. The rules that need to change, we need to go to quarters. And we're the only game of basketball played in the world that doesn't have quarters, men's college basketball. And the reason I like it is you can reset team fouls at the end of the first and third quarters. It's just a smart thing to do. And we have to change the replay rule. Make it like the NBA. Give each team one challenge. If they get their first one right, they keep it for one more, and then that's it. Because we're the referees, and it's not their fault. It's the rule. They spend more time watching TV than they do officiating the game.
Yeah, that's that last part about the replays. And maybe you could do more than one challenge. Like, we can have these compromises, but I feel like we've had these discussions for a couple of years. And Colin, you and I, when talking about the flow at the end of a basketball game.
Yeah.
Come on. Has to be a better way.
Yeah, it's too much. At some point, why do you even have referees out there? Just let the monitor call the game for the final 2 minutes of the game. That's essentially what you're doing, because every single 50-50 call of any sort.
The universal signal,
sent,
right?
Yeah. It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad when it's getting sent to replay because you've got 7-8 different players that know the signal to go do it. You're just encouraging it. I don't love it. I wish there was more of a structural sense of you can do this many times, or the coach's challenges idea, something that kind of keeps it to a minimum so that we can at least there's human error in the sport. We can't just say after 2 minutes that the human error of the sport is just done.
Actually agree. Sorry, Reimer. I agree with all of it. Advancing, I think, is a good thing to add in. Quarters, I think, is a good thing to add in. And replays instead of just going to the monitor every time we feel like it in the final 2 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, replays that you ultimately then have unlimited timeouts. And so what is even the point of it all?
I also think you should shrink the timeouts when it's inside of 5 minutes. Because there's a lot of timeouts.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, you don't really need them as much in the first half, and you have to burn that first one anyway. But five, like, do we need to hoard four timeouts to the final 2 minutes of the game?
Yeah.
Or maybe if you get to the final 2 minutes, you have two. That's it. You have two. And then if we go overtimes, you just get one.
Well, and some of them can be used for challenges. And if your challenge is successful, then maybe you retain it or something like that.
Yeah.
And with the quarters, I'm with that because, like, if you put into a tournament setting, which is, I think this is where Houston hurts themselves a lot in tournament play, is for how physical they play, they're officiated differently in the tournament than they are in the regular season, and they can get themselves into foul trouble. And how they go about the rest of the game is completely different for them.
Yeah, they had that big time last year. Jamal Shedd had some issues with foul trouble in the tournament. That's a really good point out of you. I'm fine with it. That would essentially eliminate the one-on-one. They would probably go to the more standardized five fouls, and then it's two shots from there on out, which
it would still be better. Because if you get into the first 8-10 minutes and the calling of a game is not quite, we see it all the time, right? It's not quite the same as the first half, or the players are just getting a little out of control and they haven't adjusted
yet. Yeah, you've got both teams in a bonus by the 11-minute mark in the second half.
You can't fix foul trouble, but you can fix the shooting of the free throws, which is a major implication in how the rest of a basketball game goes. I just think it would create some better flow. And then the advancing it, I think, look, it forces a coach to use his timeout. So then a timeout goes bye-bye if you want to get an advancement of the ball, like past the timeline, to get a better set, to get a better inbound set and a quicker shot in a shot clock situation. So those are all things. And the last thing, too, that I've said many times, as far as replays, let's stop having the referees that are calling the game do this. This is archaic. Like, there has to be a modern, nice room somewhere with massive screens where a real official is paid and sitting there. So a real basketball official, that's his job. He's the replay review official, and he buzzes in with what the call is. You can't have these guys going from trying to stay in tune with how they're calling the game and making their own adjustments as the game maybe gets more physical and talking to the players and talking to the coaches. There's a lot going on. Fans screaming. There's glare. You're trying to watch it on a tiny little screen and then make that call. They're there for 5 minutes trying to do it. So it takes the flow out. And there has to be a timer, 45 seconds, 60 seconds max. If we don't change the call, we're going with what's on the floor.
Yeah, that's what's simple. That's what's really hurting is how long the reviews end up being. And it's just like, we can't be sitting here for minutes on minutes. And I mean, like the A&M and Vanderbilt game, like the last 3.5 minutes took like 34 minutes, I think, just to finish, like 34 minutes of real time, just to finish 3 minutes of basketball.
Was it 34 minutes for 3 minutes? Yeah. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's absurd. Maybe not to that extent, but we see a lot of 20 minutes to get through the final 2.5. It just can't happen.
The problem isn't that it happens occasionally. The problem is that when it gets to about 5 minutes left in the game, you almost expect it at this point.
Yeah.
And we do it in our biggest games. We do it when we get the biggest stages. The NCAA tournament is coming, so get ready for some 30-minute final 5-minute periods, because teams will not want to die because it's their last chance, and they will play that foul game out like Lionel Richie all night long, baby.
throwing the hands up.
Forget those hands up. Get those hands up. All right, some crazy things happening in college basketball this week for the Buckeyes. It was an all-time first for Ohio State in their last game. We'll break them down. You're locked into Mad About Hoops.
All the college basketball talk you can handle. You're listening to Mad About Hoops. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Mad Mad About Hoops. I'm Timmy Hall. We've got Eva Bald Colin. We got Jacob Reimer. Rhyme time. You know, the only place to get the full, unfiltered podcast is where you get podcasts. Anywhere you get your audio. Search it up, download, subscribe. If it's on Apple, give it a little review and a rating. We would love that. And we say hello to all of our listeners on the Fan on the Saturday morning replay. Hey, Saturday basketball for the Buckeyes. What dimension are we in? What universe is this? We don't get to play on Saturday. What? How many Saturday games have there been for the Buckeyes? No more than three.
Was the last one Auburn or the Kentucky game, maybe?
Kentucky, Indiana State, I think, was a Saturday noon home game. That was awesome. No offense to Indiana State, but you'd love to get an actual Big Ten Saturday noon game at home.
Yeah.
But even that, you're getting a Saturday game at like the most awkward time ever, like a 3:45 start time.
Hey, I'll take it. I'll take it.
At least they're getting to it where we're actually getting the start of the game and not joining the broadcast.
That's fair.
After the first media timeout or even closer to the second media timeout.
So, my God, the Buckeyes, 116-114, their win over Nebraska at home that keeps them afloat. They have been playing basketball. Adam Jardy tweeted this out. For 126 years, never, ever, ever had they won a game when they yielded 100 points. Opponents were 20-0 against the Buckeyes, and then they somehow managed to pull this one out, 116-114. Back-to-back triples in both overtime periods from Bruce Thornton and Micah Parrish. In the first overtime, that's the one that truly got it done because Nebraska, quick 5-0 run to start it, and that always makes you squeamish when it happens that way.
Yeah, it was very wild game. Very wild game. And Bryce Williams just went nuclear, too. I mean, 43, that's insane. I know it went two overtimes, but still, what a performance by him. Needed to have it. And they buckled up down the stretch in the second overtime and found a way to get it done. Huge shots from Bruce and Micah. That's what you want from your vets, is stepping up in big-time moments and knocking down big-time shots like that. I love to see it.
So about a month and a half ago on this show, I brought up how, wow, this is pretty unique. Ohio State's top 20 in defensive efficiency on KenPom.
We've been tracking this as well. We did the update on this last week when you were doing your hockey things.
This is apparently what happens when you do really, really well against really, really bad teams, is that it inflates those numbers. And they're now outside the top 50. And I got to be honest with you, I don't think they're the 52nd best defense in the country. I'm just going to be completely honest with you. It's pretty ugly,
ouch,
man. It's pretty ugly defensively, and they've got to clean this up if they want to do anything the rest of this month that's really of high level. And it's going to have to start this week against Umar Ballo and Malik Renu down in the post, because was not pretty the last time. I know it went to overtime, but Ballo got pretty much whatever he wanted, especially on the glass. I'm very interested to see if they can stop the droughts, because those also helped, you know, Nebraska come back down 10 points. It felt like multiple times.
Well, they have issues. They have issues as well. I'll go back to what you said with the post play for defense coming up with Ballo and Renu. They are at a loss for what to do, because I feel like Sean Stewart has had some better play. And I feel like he's getting called for at least a foul a game now that isn't a foul. And that's a lot of players deal with that too, right?
Yeah.
And it's still on you to try to foul even less, right? Like there's contact that isn't always and should be a foul, but they're calling it for whatever reason. Maybe it's because of your play so far and film that's out on you, or you're getting those same officials that called your games earlier in the year. They remembered things about how you position yourself, how you hammer down with the arm, things like that. But between him and Aaron Bradshaw, I just don't know if they can A, either provide enough defense like that to keep those guys out of the semicircle, or B, do it without fouling and staying out of trouble. And then you have Evan Mahaffey that you got to rely on, and they can only have his minutes being so high because of, you either take out Devin Royal, and that's not a great thing, or you try to have him, you know, play the Devin Royal flip between the four and the five, then you're too small,
yeah,
right? Or you have to take Micah Parrish, because Evan's really like a three, but you just lose too much offensively to have a guy like Parrish out of the game and the shooting.
Right.
It's just tough.
Yeah.
Either any way you slice it, it's tough for them defensively.
Yeah. They That's the biggest thing in this one, is trying to find a way to slow down those guys like you mentioned. And I'm concerned about it. To your point about the droughts and giving up runs, like, Ohio State is one of the worst in college basketball.
I think they're in the top 10 of, what is it, like 6 or 7 minute droughts?
The kill shot chart?
Yeah, and the, yeah, and
they're
the
not
kill
in a good place
chart,
on the kill shot
up,
chart.
They give up a lot of runs, and that's kind of one thing I was worried about with UCLA, because UCLA is one of the best at going on kill shots and going on big runs. I haven't looked at the graph in a minute to see where Indiana's at and where it favors for Ohio State if it doesn't. But, yeah, especially the last game of the year in Assembly Hall, if they can start knocking down some shots like they have been, like that could be detrimental for Ohio State on Saturday.
I'm just trying to wonder what they can do to neutralize those guys, or do you just allow them to get what they're going to get? Like,
I think this is
it a zone? Like, what do you, because they haven't played great zone defense this year.
Right. It's a good,
and
it's
you
got to
box
question.
Out in the zone too. And
yeah,
when they've gone zone, I haven't seen that.
I still haven't seen a game, and Aaron Bradshaw's minutes have yet to be up. Right. But I still haven't seen a game that where he's got even 2 rebounds.
Yeah.
Like, what's the deal with that? And a lot of times on defense, he's just getting out of position. And at the very least, like, you're not expecting he knocked down another 3, and he gave you some points. He actually gave you some offense in 2 of these last handful of games. But it's defensively, for me, like, when I watch Aaron Bradshaw, it's where he's choosing to go play help defense. It's how he just isn't rolling like you'd like to see a guy roll to get back to his spot with where you need him on the floor and protecting the rim. If you're going to go and help, like, I want you helping at the rim and helping at the basket. Like, it doesn't need to be out on a 3-point attempt.
Well, especially in this game, like, Ballo's not going to be any threat on the perimeter.
No.
And I'm not worried about Renew either. So, yeah, this is definitely the game where you need to take advantage of just, you know, clogging up that paint.
Yeah, and they're going to run lots of pick and roll actions to try to get mismatches or try to get a look for Ballo or Renew. And yeah, don't help as much. Give the guard, whether it's Bruce, Mobley, or Micah,
don't even go up to the ball screen.
Right.
Just don't even go
give
up
him
to
a
it.
Gap underneath
yeah,
to go
play
under
5 feet
and
below.
Then recover.
I don't even need to. If one of those bigs is going to be in the ball screen actions, don't even approach it.
No.
Just stay back. Say, okay, go and set the pick, and, you know, we'll live with that.
And if they come at you, use your length to bottle whatever shot they're going to throw up or try to dish it out.
All right, so how about Rick Pitino and Richard Pitino? A couple things I wanted to mention before we're done here. And I didn't want to end it too negative on Ohio State. They won the basketball game. They scored a bunch of points. It was double overtime. It was chaotic. It was March Madness-esque. I will finish with that point. Sometimes you have to win crazy games when basketball gets crazy and things don't go your way. You're not playing great defense, but you find a way. So there's that. They have a chance.
It was a bubble game between two bubble teams. So you just have to win it however you can.
Have to win. They have another one. They have the Big Ten tournament chances. It should be, at the very least, a lot of fun to see how this goes. It won't be fun if they don't get in, because we're dying to get back there, but I hope they get it. So Rick Pitino and Richard Pitino, cool little story how in the same week, Rick Pitino is leading St. John's to their first Big East title since 85. Wow, that's back in the day. And then Richard is leading New Mexico to their first Mountain West title in 10 years. So pretty cool father-son thing across the country, New Mexico to New York, but pretty cool deal for those guys.
I got a hot take. I don't know if it may be a hot take for you guys, but I think the other Pitino could go on a deeper run in March.
I like that. Now,
Lobos,
traditionally,
huh?
Recently, the Mountain West has not been great in the tournament recently. Mm-hmm. I get that. And I felt bad for them last year when they were in, and they had a chance, and I think they matched up with Clemson, and it just didn't work out there. I did take the Lobos in that game. But yes, Donovan Dent is a great one of the best scoring guards you're going to find in the mid-major
level.
He's
a March name. Like, he has the capability to take a country by storm, I think, for just elite and awesome play with the style of basketball that they play, getting up and down. Their offense in general is just so fun to watch, and then led by him. That's a team that could really take the hearts of some teams in America.
Yeah, there's some Mountain West teams that are fun. Obviously, you mentioned New Mexico.
Utah State is a fun team, 24-16.
Incredible how they just bounced back from losing Sprinkle there last year, and they've had 3 straight 1-year coaches.
It's insane.
They're just consistent.
It's insane what they do out there with just reproducing coach after coach and just continuing to compete at a high level.
But yeah, no, I like that point. I obviously it's going to depend on draw. Matchups are always a
right,
big thing.
Of course.
But I think the roster makeup with you pairing Donovan Dent with Nelly Jr. Joseph down low, it's a good pair.
Yeah, Utah State, great ice cream as well. Mm. Aggie ice cream on campus. They make it there. NC State also, I think, makes some ice cream on their campus. Which, by the way, they don't even get to go to the ACC tournament.
Yeah, went on the little run there thanks to Tony Bennett not fouling up three, letting NC State start their magical run going to the Final Four. And then a year later, after Kevin Keats gets extended, they don't even make the ACC tournament.
No. Makes sense on the ice cream front, though. They're both agricultural schools.
Yeah.
You know, big thing. So
enjoy that ice cream,
State. Enjoy it, yeah. NC State, Utah State with the great campus ice creams. That's a good way to be celebrating some March Madness. Man, we got to get our rest. A lot of basketball coming up this next week.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's a big – don't sleep on this week. This is a huge mid-major week. We've mentioned Arch Madness earlier in the
first game was a game winner.
Yes, it was. And obviously, Drake is a team that you need to watch, not only because they could win their conference tournament. I think they would be the favorite. But that's a team that, depending on where they get seated, man, they're going to be a very popular upset.
Bennett Sturts is a dog. He can really fill it up.
All right, guys, have fun.
You as well, Timmy.
You too.
And everybody listening, everybody that's excited about this, have fun yourselves. Great time of year, Selection Sunday, next Sunday. Oh, my goodness. And, of course, if you're listening on Saturday morning on The Fan, the Buckeye game is coming up at 3:45 with a 3 o'clock coverage start time. So I will be back. Well, actually, 2:45 for the warm-up action. Yeah, 3 o'clock for the network start time. Everybody enjoy the basketball. This is Mad About Hoops.